Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, October 21st, 2021. The UN Human Rights Commission in South Sudan accuses the South Sudan government of being hostile to activists and journalists.
This UN Human Rights Commission, who is monitoring them, who is supervising them? They just sit in their offices here in Juba and they write.
And South Sudanese lawmakers at the East African Legislative Assembly say their country's minister for the East African community is missing in action.
We have constantly having a problem of absence of our ministers, which really affect us. We don't have guidance.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Commission of Human Rights Office in South Sudan is expressing concern about what it says are ongoing threats, harassment, and intimidation of prominent human rights defenders, journalists, and civil society activists across the country. South Sudan's government denies the allegation that government security forces are harassing activists. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
In its statement yesterday, the UN Rights Commission alleged that South Sudan government security officers continue to make the work and lives of the rights defenders difficult, forcing some of the activists to flee the country. The commission said threats by the National Security Service against the civil society leaders violate human rights and undermine transition to peace in the country. It also said officers from the National Security Service continue to harass the colleagues and families of activists who have fled the country. South Sudan government spokesperson Michael Makwe denies the allegations and questions the commission's motives.
This UN Human Rights Commission, who is monitoring them, who is supervising them? They just sit in their offices here in Juba. And they write, because they must write something controversial to prove that they are doing their job, so that they continue in their job. Otherwise, if they write a good report, there will be no need for them to continue in South Sudan, and they will lose their job.
Yasmin Soka, the chair of the UN Commission on Human Rights, says, in her words, civic space in South Sudan is eroding at the accelerating pace. She says the security service role in suppressing dissent and criticism and in pushing some of those involved in constitutional and transitional justice efforts to flee the country has discouraged the participation of others. She said it negates the government's own efforts in critical arenas. The commission says the activists who have been forced to flee the country include Jame David Kolok and Wani Michael. Kolok is a member of the technical committee to conduct a consultative process on truth, reconciliation and healing, and Michael has acted as a youth representative on the National Constitution Amendment Committee. The commission says the government froze the bank accounts of the two activists and those of the non-government organizations they led. Andrew Clapham, one of the commissioners of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, said the government's targeting of high-profile human rights defenders, in his words, will have a chilling effect on civil society and will discourage public participation. He said that will undermine confidence in the work on transitional justice, framing a constitution making and setting up national elections, which he said are essential to the access of the transition set out by the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. The 2018 peace agreement requires the drafting of a permanent constitution and the establishment of a commission on truth, reconciliation, and healing. While implementation of those and other measures, including requirements for broad public consultations, have been slow, in recent months, government leaders have renewed pledges and taken steps toward them, says the commission. The commission says these latest restrictions and acts of harassment began after the creation of a People's Coalition for Civil Action, or PCCA, in July. Its members planned a public assembly to take place in August, but it never took place because the authorities detained some participants, raided offices, and put an enhanced presence of security forces on the streets of Juba. Makwe says the government could not allow the PCCA assembly because they are its enemies.
This is a normal thing that is done all over the world. What is particular about South Sudan, to allow enemies of the government to flourish within the government territory. It's just a normal thing, but they want to make South Sudan a test case for all their nonsense, for all their theories. We are not even applicable in their own country.
The commission says the state's authorities must respect and protect the rights of human rights defenders, adding this is an obligation under international law. It would also demonstrate that South Sudan's commitment to strengthening its systems for the consolidation of human rights is genuine. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some legislators representing South Sudan at the East African Legislative Assembly are raising concern about what they say is reluctancy by the country's Minister for East African Community to participate in the regional bloc. One lawmaker says Minister Deng Alor last attended a session of the East African Community Council of Ministers meeting in 2020. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
Woda Odoke Jeremiah is one of the lawmakers representing South Sudan in the East African Legislative Assembly. She says in addition to attending Council of Ministers meetings of the regional bloc, ministers of the East African Community Affairs from the member states are supposed to attend plenary sittings of the East African Legislative Assembly. She says Deng Alor, South Sudan's Minister for East African Community Affairs, has not been at these meetings. Jeremiah says she last saw Alor attending a virtual session of the assembly when he was being sworn in.
We have constantly having a problem of absence of our ministers, which really affect us. We don't have guidance. We don't have sometimes we have been even accused by our colleagues that we're standing as executive and standing as members of parliament, because sometimes there are things which are supposed to be asked to our ministers, and they have to apply on behalf of the government. Being a member from South Sudan, I cannot give a blind eye on that. I'll be talking.
Jeremiah says Anito, the chairperson of the South Sudan chapter of the East African Community, sometimes has to stand in for the minister and speak on behalf of the government. But she says at times ministers from the other ESC partner states say they want to hear directly from a South Sudanese government minister. She says South Sudanese lawmakers have also been questioned a number of times by the Council of Ministers on whether the government is serious about being integrated into the ESC because the South Sudanese ministers don't attend sessions. Jeremiah says she wants the minister to always participate. Guy Deng Niel, another legislator representing South Sudan in the ESC Assembly, says recently there were issues to do with certain payments in the East African Legislative Assembly that required approval from all the ministers in the partner states. She says South Sudan's lawmakers had to go through the undersecretary to reach out to the minister because Alor was not available. She says the minister several times has delegated the undersecretary to represent him in the ESC. Niel says Minister Alor needs to understand that there are issues that are only meant for the ministers and that no one else can stand in.
It is a decision that are taken at the ministerial level, and they cannot really be delegated, you know, to other technocrats, then, because it is the final decision really sits with the minister. That's why it's imperative that they are all part of the process. Delegating it is just not an option. So it creates delay in decision making, which can also delay other things that need to be done, especially when you're dealing with things to do with the budget.
South Sudan EAC legislator Thomas Dute says he understands the minister may be quite busy because he is also participating in the peace implementation efforts. He says once in a while he has seen Alor connecting virtually to attend the sessions. Dute says he is concerned that other South Sudan ministers don't attend developmental conferences. He says it is the responsibility of the minister of EAC to inform other South Sudan ministers to attend sectorial conferences to give the government's views.
It made us to default in some situation because if you don't attend meeting as a line minister, an example of Ministry of Road, which is the key ministry here, because road and infrastructures is one of the fundamental elements in the livelihood of the East African community. There has been a plan of extending the East African Highway to Republic of South Sudan through Uganda. It has been there, and with lack of participation of that particular line ministry, it is affecting South Sudan, because if you don't attend where the decisions are being made, it is always an issue.
Dute says if ministers don't attend their sectorial meetings, that will mean the country will always have to abide with what others decide. He says that is not good because South Sudan should also table its views to address its interests. Repeated calls to South Sudan Minister for East African Community Affairs, Deng Alor, to comment on this story went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Arusha, Tanzania.
The UN Refugee Agency reports catastrophic flooding in South Sudan has affected more than 700,000 people. It reports rains in the country are expected to continue for the rest of the year, increasing the number of people needing humanitarian aid to survive. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Floods are not new to South Sudan. What is new is the frequency and intensity of the flooding. UNHCR representative in South Sudan, Arafat Jamal, describes the current flooding, which has affected more than 700,000 people, as being of near biblical proportions.
People have lived with flooding for millennia, but they've been able to cope. They've been able to move to higher ground when the floods are there and then come down when they recede. But when you have a high level of flooding year after year that destroys the crops and doesn't allow you to replant, that's when you've got an erosion in people's ability to survive.
Jamal says the present floods have hit at a time when people in South Sudan are facing the triple threat of conflict, COVID-19, and hunger. He says the devastating flooding is expected to continue as the climate crisis intensifies. He notes Jonglei, Unity, Northern Bahr El Ghazal, and Upper Nile are the worst affected states. He says that in his travels through these hard-hit areas, he has witnessed the suffering of the people, many of whom are desperately moving around in search of safety.
I've seen people stranded on islands. I've heard from people who have had to survive by eating grass and roots. And we have also heard of people who have had to walk for 10 days to access dry land. It is also hugely destructive in terms of assets. This is an agricultural country and a country that depends upon its herds of cattle.
Jamal says cattle are stranded and drowning, mired in the mud and unable to survive. He says whole fields of sorghum, mangoes, and millet are destroyed by flooding. He says the UNHCR, together with South Sudan's government, are delivering urgently needed aid to the most vulnerable. That aid includes hygiene items, food, emergency shelter, and solar lanterns to provide light. However, he adds much more assistance is needed and is appealing to the international community to help rebuild the affected communities and restore people's lives and livelihoods. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, activists stage counter-protests in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go in and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Tens of thousands of Sudanese took to the streets Thursday to commemorate the 57th anniversary of the toppling of Sudan's first military ruler, General Ibrahim Aboud, and to demand a smooth transition to democracy and civilian rule. Protesters from a pro-military splinter faction of the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition have been holding a sit-in outside Sudan's presidential palace for the past 6 days. Nabil Biagio caught up with reporter Michael Atit, who has been following the protests in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
I'm currently at the airport road in Khartoum, where thousands of protesters, men, women, and even children, are taking part in today's protest. This protest they are taking place as simultaneous event. They are also marking the 58th anniversary of the similar protest against the President Ibrahim Aboud more than 50 years ago. And they are also trying to send a message today to the transitional government in Sudan to fulfill the aspirations of the citizens and to also implement the objectives of the Sudanese revolution, that is freedom, peace, and justice. As I said, thousands of Sudanese have come out today, not only in Khartoum, but in other state capitals as well. And in Khartoum here, particularly, they have organized it in such a way that they don't confront with the other protesters who are continuing in a sit-in protest 4 to 5 days ago in front of the presidential palace. So in Omdurman, they have organized it in such a way that they come in front of the parliament and they have a speech there. All the activities are taking place there for those who are in Omdurman. And for those also in Khartoum North, they have also organized in front of the headquarters of the locality in Khartoum North. And in Khartoum, there are several protesters coming from different directions. So as I speak, there are 3 or 4 groups that they've joined together currently at the airport road, and they are going also towards Tigisti. They are going to meet other protesters who are coming from Buri and from Soba and other groups that are coming such as Mayo and Atari. So these protests, their demands are the transition government should fulfill the aspirations of the citizens, and they are also reminding the transitional government to to present those who committed crimes, especially those groups from the previous administration, talk of Ousmane President al-Bashir and his supporters and his groups, that they should be handed over to the ICC as soon as possible. And they're also trying to send a message to the military component of the government that they should also try to implement the idea of having a smooth transition period so that the Sudanese government, I mean the Sudanese people, go at the end of the transition period to the election polls and go at their elected government and so on.
Yes, like you said, there is another group that came out on the 16th, staged a protest, and then they have staged a sit-in in front of the presidential palace for 6 days now. As we speak, they're still there. What is the size of today's crowd compared to the one we have seen for the last 6 days?
Yeah, thank you. Before I actually came to these protests, to this group, I went to see how is the general overview of the other protests or the other sit-in. But in terms of comparison, the current group, this protest which is coming, which is taking place today, is the number is so big because even though they are not in one place. So if you talk of Khartoum, if you talk of Omdurman, if you talk of Khartoum North, and as well as the other state, the other capital within Sudan. So you will see definitely today's protest is much more even double than the sit-in. Because the sit-in in front of the presidential palace, they only, if you could say, 1,000 or 2. But so the protest today is so huge. You can estimate something between 15 to 20,000, the group that I'm speaking currently is taking place in Khartoum.
So these are two opposing groups. The first one is calling for the government to be dissolved, but the protesters who came out today are supporting the government but making these demands that you mentioned. What security measures have the authorities put in place to avoid violence in case these two groups come face to face?
Okay, there are significant presence of the police around the junction on the street, but they are just on their pickup. And the other something that can be noticed is that this protest of today has been organized. The direction of the protest is far away from presidential palace, because I think the organizers also thought of it wisely that they should not go towards the other sit-in group, because definitely there would be a confrontation if this group would have gone there. So they thought of it wisely. They actually moved out of the downtown and came towards the southern part of the capital to express their view and also to send their message to the transitional government.
That's South Sudan in Focus reporter Michael Atit speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Workers from Kenya say they have endured abuses in the Middle East, often at the hands of their employers. But an aid agency is offering them a chance to rebuild their lives in Kenya. Hundreds of survivors of forced labor are now able to access support offered by a group that offers a soft landing for those in need. For VOA News, Brenda Molinya reports from Nairobi.
Faith Murunga's store on the outskirts of Kenya's capital is open for business. It has been barely 6 months old in operation, helping her put food on her family's table. It isn't what she had anticipated when she left Kenya in 2019 for work in Saudi Arabia, a popular work destination for those unable to find jobs in Kenya. She says what she was promised as she emigrated and what she found there were worlds apart. She says, the boss came and told me that as long as I agreed to travel to their country, I must do each and every chore. He said, I would not have the right to complain. They had paid a lot of money to buy me. I was therefore their property. During her 2 years of service in Saudi Arabia, Murunga suffered both emotional and physical abuse at the hands of her employer until a good Samaritan came to her aid and facilitated her return to Kenya. Back home, she received help from Heart Kenya, an organization that fights human trafficking and helps people like Faith. Since Heart Kenya was formed in 2010, the organization has helped more than 700 survivors of forced labor who have come home scarred. Marcy Atieno, the organization's outreach manager, says the survivors, 80% of them women, have varying degrees of trauma when they seek help.
When a survivor comes to us, they are distressed. Some of them appear confused. They don't know what to do next. And you find someone who does not know where to start. They do not have a house. They don't want to go back home because everyone knows they went abroad. So they're expecting that they will come with something.
The organization takes in survivors of forced labor and other work-related abuses and helps them rebuild their lives through counseling, training, and supporting their ability to make a living. Marcy Atieno explains.
This process is actually a very participatory process where it's the caseworker and the survivor chatting ways into which they are going to work together for proper rehabilitation. So the survivor has a voice and they can actually say no to a service because our services are individualized and they are survivor-centered.
Thank you, my sister. My name is
the Kenya Union of Domestic Hotels, Educational Institutes, Hospitals and Allied Workers, or UDEHA. The union that fights for the rights of workers says the migration of workers to the Middle East is likely to continue as long as Kenya's 10% unemployment rate stays as high as it is. Albert Njeru, the union's general secretary, advises those seeking work as unskilled labor abroad to be extra vigilant.
Seek for proper information. Consult widely. And before you go, get it right. Don't go where you can see black spots.
Heart Kenya's leadership says it is ready to handle cases like Faith's as they appear. For now, Faith says she's grateful for another chance at life away from the abuse she suffered in a foreign land. Brenda Molinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
Let us know how you feel about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We reserve the right to air your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Beledi by Mawa. We have been listening to Mawa and the song Beledi. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap. practice social distancing and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Uganda, Shilu Arua, Kenya, Shilu Nadapal, Ubagi Alfa Dulude.